views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
Call in 641-715-3660, and the participant code is 549-032. Press star 61 if you have a question or a comment, because we have an explosive topic tonight. You know, I talked to a big sports fan this evening to ask them what were their thoughts about the Missouri football players boycotting playing any games. They're on a strike. They're not going to play any games. One of the players, I think he's a defensive linebacker. He's actually on a hunger strike. So what happened is the Missouri football team has joined in with the other students of this university in Missouri. Let me see. I think it's Columbia. I believe it's Columbia in Columbia, Missouri, not too far from Ferguson. Of course, we know Missouri is one of the most racist states in this country. But the football team has joined in the protest with the other students because of the mistreatment, being treated like subhumans, as they've stated. The students have stated that they're paying to attend a university and they're being mistreated. They're being discriminated against. They don't have the same opportunities as the white students. I think it was just this past weekend, or this past week, a swastika was drawn on the dorm wall in feces. So someone actually took some human feces and drew a swastika on one of the dorms, okay? So the black students there have been protesting for quite some time, and these protests started after the Michael Brown assassination by Darren Wilson, the cop there in Ferguson, and things have just escalated. Students, along with the rest of black people in America, many of us are just tired. People are just tired of being mistreated. And I am just, let me just applaud these football players, because I'm sure that they had to consider the risk of losing their scholarships, because I know some of them may be on like athletic scholarships. And so for them to take that stand and join in with the other students, and that's what brought the attention, because these students have been protesting for quite some time, from my understanding. But you know, when you start messing with those white folks' money, and that sports and them athletes and sports on these universities, then that's when you start getting some attention. And even the white coach and some of the white players have joined in this protest and boycott. So there's supposed to be like a big game this Saturday, and the football team has basically stated that they will not participate in this game until the university president, President Tim Wolf, mind you, Wolf, and that right, King B. Tim Wolf said that, they said those students said that they will not play in that game. They are standing in solidarity with the rest of the students, and they just refuse to play. And I am just elated, and I am happy. I'm just supporting them, and I hope that they stand firm and stand strong. I'm glad to see that the coach is standing behind them, and the president made a statement today, and I'll play the video But the president made a statement and told the black students that they're just upset because they don't feel like they can succeed or something to that effect. I'll play the video. And also there was a homecoming parade a couple of months ago maybe, and mm-hmm. the students, they stood in front of the university president's motorcade and protesting and trying to bring attention to the president about their condition, about their plight, about the struggle and what they're actually protesting all about, the mistreatment mm-hmm. on the campus. And he just simply ignored them and had them removed away from around his car, like, get on out of here, nigga, and stop complaining, you know. And so these students are standing up. And do you know, I received a call from Press TV today in Iran to give a statement Ooh. About this. Yes. Ooh. And so I gave a statement. But before I did, I called a friend of mine that I know is a big sports fan, just to get their take. I wanted to hear what a sports person thought of it. And the person told me they didn't even know, hadn't even heard about this. And actually, you know, I rarely turn on my TV, so I mean, mm-hmm. I didn't see anything on the news. I believe I first saw something about them protesting maybe like Friday night on Twitter or something like that. So I just heard about this myself this weekend. It was on social media. I didn't see anything. You know, I scroll through my phone for the news. I read the news on my phone or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's amazing how, you know, even people that are into sports were unaware of this. And so they were like, wow, okay, so I guess that's why Missouri been losing. I said, well, I guess so, because they said they are not playing. They're on strike. So it's over 30 students, and from my understanding, more have joined that strike today. So let me hear your thoughts, King B, before I play this clip. I'll get this clip prepared to play.
Hey, well, thanks again. Hello, everybody. Who's with us? Is that you and I?
Right now, it's just you and I. Mother Dunning, she will be joining us soon.
Okay.
And
I tried to get Dr. Short to join, because this is a very, very most urgent situation. And you see how the media is whiting out the story. I just by chance got it on NBC Network News and was surprised and pleased that they carried it. I know Al Jazeera should have something better than NBC, but what it is that you can mess with a rabbit long enough and a rabbit will snap at you. These racist dogs in and around this country are so sure of themselves that black people will never wake up and smell the coffee. Right now, those football players is cutting into the profit of what this card's supposed to be making for these games. And that money talks, everything else walks. That president
runs the marathon.
That president is under the pressure. Well, what can you do to stop these negros? And he said, well, I'm doing the best I can, but I can't seem to shake them. And they seem to be united and not willing to crack. So I feel that he will be out of this. He will be out of there by Friday.
You know, I'm kind of thinking that too. I really do think that he's going to have to resign.
Because we're
talking about money. Now, if it was just a regular little Missouri black little students want to complain, yeah. honey, please. You know, yeah. because as I stated, they've been complaining for over a year, because they've been protesting since Michael Brown's death, right?
See?
So, but now all of a sudden when the football players joined in, then that's when it started getting a little more publicity via social media, though, because like I said, there's still some sports fanatics that are unaware of what's going on in Missouri with the football team. So, I think he may end up having to just leave.
I'm sure he's going to bed tonight with a serious headache, because you see, his racism is so far gone. He wasn't counting on these blacks continuing with no unrelenting and no ceasing that pressure. And the money is dwindling. And what can he tell the powers that be that run the whole operation of the college, that this guy here can not hold out for long, the clock can't hold out for long, with it's hemorrhaging. They can't stop the hemorrhaging.
Uh-huh.
And you're telling me you had no desire to even give the students the kind of satisfaction that you was concerned, and that you would be very much outspoken about the racist attempt to intimidate blacks and to cause racial tension on the campus. You did nothing to have their security, step up the security of the dorms that blacks are, and to just give some kind of indication that you gave a damn. So a compilation of stuff. When the volcano erupts, it don't care who it hurts. Innocent people will be getting hurt. Now, if this man has some big guns behind him, he will dig into his heels, because he's got some big guns to back him up. But the black students is going to need the help of all those influential blacks that claim they are on the side of justice and want black people to get justice. You can't depend on the attorney general. She's an empty dress. You can't depend on the Congressional Black Caucus. They are empty dresses and suits. The black pastors, they long ago sold their soul for a few trinkets. So they ended up being ecclesiastical pimps. So the vast majority of them are ecclesiastical pimps. So I don't know what, I don't think the students won't dare have Sharpton talk to them, because he ain't coming without giving him some money up front anyway. He has been exposed a while back as being the emperor has no clothes, and that he was always a fake, a fraud, and a phony. He was a fat one before, now he's a skinny one. He's an anaconda, anaconda, with ugly glasses that wants to now.
one time he had on some little red rim glasses.
Looking
like a little drag queen.
He called it right. He has been wanting for some time. But you see, we have no leadership in the black community. So these students, God bless them, have taken it upon themselves. The ancestors. See, when you listen to the ancestors, they will tell you what you must do.
Uh-huh.
We've had some great leaders. You had Malcolm. You had Marcus Garvey. Just those two alone. Of course, you had Stokely Carmack of Kwame Ture, H. Brown, Khalil Alameen now. So, you know, we've had some great leaders that stood up to white supremacy, because the enemy is still all over. Like Malcolm said, quit talking about the South. It's the enemy is south of the Canadian border of the South. So what's going on in Missouri can happen right here in Brooklyn. Can happen right in Connecticut, in Minnesota, anywhere. And you see, black people are very, very, very slow to wake up to the fact that we are hated, and they hate us for all this time because we survive. And we are the number one arch nemesis, because they have always associated us with being subhuman. Imagine all this time, we're the only ethnic group that is defamed in the Constitution. The only ethnic group defamed in the Constitution. And all this time, the Congressional Black Caucus has never made a move to get it erased, dismissed from the Constitution, that we are 3/5. So there are whites walking around, they're smiling at you, laughing at you and all that. But in the back of their mind, they consider us beast, subhuman. Okay. And my good friend, who should be calling in, Brother Ed Marshall, he's one of the revolutionary war dogs from way back then. I gave the number of his bike, because his name is Ed Marshall. After you see a new number coming, it's a 718 number, that might be Ed Marshall. But he has this theory that is backed on factual information about how the DNA of Europeans is lower than African man DNA. So it's like, he's just slightly, maybe one above the gorilla. But we are 9 and he's 5. DNA. Okay. DNA of us. So, you know, mm-hmm. we're dealing with a man who knows that we are superior people, but we've been so badly beaten down that we believe the lie that we are nothing. But these two, thanks be to God, these students are valiantly fighting back, and it was a long time.
Oh my God, I'm just so glad to see them standing up. Hey, King B, I want to set the context for the show. Why don't I start out with a little Malcolm for us, Black nationalism. I want to just play this, and let me just send out a tweet and post our show so we can get some people in here to share their thoughts and commentary. Because, you know, we're always talking about how we want these athletes and celebrities to stand up and take a stand. Certainly. And, yes. And I was listening to, I think it was on the Political Prisoner radio show earlier, an earlier broadcast on Black Talk radio network here on the station. And, Scotty was speaking about Quentin Tarantino. I know you've heard about him.
Yeah, right. He won't back down, which is good.
Yeah.
But did you hear what Kareem Abdul-Jabbar got on Michael Jordan? You heard about that?
Michael Jordan, old punk ass. I'm so glad he said something about it. Well, we talked about Stephon Marbury also came down on Michael Jordan and said he was pimping the Black community with them high ass, old ass, recycled ass. Jordan's did, you know, everybody's always buying and he's supporting that crap. And, you know, Michael Jordan, you know, he's just, oh my God, he is just, I'm so disgusted with him.
Well, you know, we don't even understand that his father was bumped off, and Michael knows the real deal that his father was bumped off. But those cheap material sneakers selling for over $200, $300 somewhere. A young man named Lennon Lacy lost his life in found hanging in an all-white trailer park in a town called Battleboro, North Carolina. Bladesboro, North Carolina. He was messing with a white woman. This is a 17-year-old Boston football player. He found hanging in an all-white trailer park, but his mother said he was impeccably dressed. He left home wearing a size 11. Jordan sneakers. When the body's found, the sneakers are missing. Jordan sneakers are missing, but they had on a size 10. Dirty white sneakers, size 10 unlaced. And the white woman said, she had to find out for her own safety because she said her ex-husband didn't like the idea that she's seeing a Black man and a young Black boy, you know, and she said it wasn't lynching. She's fleeing for her life. Hadn't ever heard a word from this Reverend Dr. William Barber, who's always out there protesting down there, out there in Chicago, Greensboro. He hasn't said a mumbling word. When he swept me down, he's going to have an investigation to declare it officially a lynching of Lennon Lacy. Tell all those international press, they are still lynching Black people in, not only in Staten Island, but in the Deep South, place called Bladesboro. And I'm sick and tired from being sick and tired that Black people will show their humanity before a trial even begins. Those family members who lost their loved ones at the church in Charleston, but they forgave the man who hasn't even been on trial yet.
They haven't even put their loved ones in the grave yet. They're still in the corner at the medical examiner's office. And then they were singing Negro spirituals and all of that Anderson Cooper dude. Oh, but you know what? What's his name? Don Lemon. Oh my God.
Oh God.
You know, I am so glad that Black people are waking up to him and not supporting him with his. Don't even get me started.
Well, you know, he has a woman trapped in his body waiting to be released. And his mind is all screwed up, thinking that it's okay to be white and not to be thinking Black. Because we had gay Black men back in the days of the movement. We had, Benson Hughes.
Benard Rustin,
and you had James Baldwin.
Yeah. But yeah, James Baldwin. Yeah.
You know, I didn't care that they slept with a men, but no. Think about it. They were in tune to the needs of our people. Benson Hughes was one of the most prolific writers of our people's plight. Mm-hmm. And, you know, James Baldwin as well. And Bed Rustin, Dr. King trusted Bed Rustin to be able to pull off the biggest demonstration in the history of black people protesting. And Bed Rustin didn't disgrace Dr. King. He carried out immensely with all of the naysayers. Bed Rustin, rest his soul, did a marvelous job that March on Washington. And Dr. King couldn't depend on the NAACP. He couldn't depend on Jesse Jackson. You know, Jesse Jackson to this day will never come clean as to how is it possible Mrs. King didn't want anything to do with him. He never will fess up to apologize, even though she won't hear it. But he knew, and she knew, that he took blood and put it on somewhere on his shirt from somewhere and put it on his T-shirt and swore that he held Dr. King's head while Dr. King took his last breath. Jesse was nowhere to be found. He was nowhere near there. So, you know, you got all these con artists, people who care less. Oh, it's on Channel 11, but in terms of students, walk out over racism. It's on Channel 11 News. Whoa.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, you know, the governor came out and spoke. The governor has even made a statement. So,
he's a blue dog Democrat, and you know, he is not to be trusted. Not from your eyes. He's not to be trusted.
I don't trust none of these people. They're all full of games. Let me play this Malcolm, and then we're gonna get back into our topic. Let's hear some Malcolm. Just set the mood.
The political philosophy of black nationalism only means that the black man should control the politics and the politicians in his own community. The time when white people can come in our community and get us to vote for them so that they can be our political leaders and tell us what to do and what not to do is long gone. By the same token, the time when that same white man, knowing that your eyes are too far open, can send another Negro into the community, get you and me to support him so he can use him to lead us astray, those days are long gone. So the political philosophy of black nationalism only means that we will have to carry on a political program of re-education. To open our people's eyes, make us become more politically conscious, politically mature. And then we will, whenever we get ready to cast our ballot, that ballot will be cast for a man of the community who has the good of the community at heart. And the economic philosophy of black nationalism only means that we should own and operate and control the economy of our community. You would never find, you can't open up a black store in a white community. White man won't even patronize you. And he's not wrong. He got sense enough to look out for himself. And you don't have sense enough to look out for yourself. The white man is too intelligent to let someone else come and gain control of the economy of his community. But you will let anybody come in and control the economy of your community. Control the housing, control the education. Control the jobs, control the businesses, under the pretext that you want to integrate. No, you're out of your mind. The economic philosophy of black nationalism only means that we have to become involved in a program of re-education to educate our people into the importance of knowing that when you spend your dollar out of the community in which you live, the community in which you spend your money becomes richer and richer. The community out of which you take your money becomes poorer and poorer. And because these Negroes who have been misled, misguided, are breaking their necks to take their money and spend it with the man. The man is becoming richer and richer, and you're becoming poorer and poorer. And then what happens? The community in which you live becomes a slum. It becomes a ghetto. The conditions become run down. And then you have the audacity to complain about poor housing in a run-down community. Why, you run it down yourself when you take your dollar out. And you and I are in a double trap, because not only do we lose by taking our money someplace else and spending it, when we try and spend it in our own community, we're trapped because we haven't had sense enough to set up stores and control the businesses of our community. The man who's controlling the stores in our community is a man who doesn't look like we do. He's a man who doesn't even live in the community. So you and I, even when we try and spend our money in the block where we live or the area where we live, we're spending it with a man who, when the sun goes down, takes that basket full of money in another part of the town. So we're trapped, double trapped, triple trapped. Anywhere we go, we find that we're trapped. And every kind of solution that someone comes up with is just another trap. But the political and economic philosophy of black nationalism, the economic philosophy of black nationalism shows our people the importance of setting up these little stores and developing them and expanding them into larger operations. Woolworth didn't start out big like they are today. They started out with a dime store and expanded and expanded and expanded until today they're all over the country and all over the world, and they're getting some of everybody's money. Now, this is what you and I and General Motors, the same way, didn't start out like it is. It started out just a little rat race type operation. And it expanded and expanded until today is where it is right now. And you and I have to make a stop. And the best place to start is right in the community where we live. So our people not only have to be re-educated to the importance of supporting black business, but the black man himself has to be made aware of the importance of going into business. And once you and I go into business, we own and operate at least the businesses in our community, what we will be doing is developing a situation wherein we will actually be able to create employment for the people in the community. And once you can create some employment in the community where you live, it will eliminate the necessity of you and me having to act ignorantly and disgracefully, boycotting and picketing some cracker someplace else, trying to beg him for a job.
Okay, I just love it when Malcolm says that part right there about us begging them for a job, actually, disgustingly and ignorantly. I just love it, love it, love it. Let's take a quick break and we'll come right back.
Dynamic, articulate, perceptive, courageous, outspoken.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All right, and we are back. So, Canty, black nationalism, that is the key. But back to our Missouri football players and the other students there. You know, we could say, oh, well, you know, just go to an HBCU. But I tell you, Canty, even at the HBCUs, like right here in Houston, Texas Southern, the commercials that are being presented to recruit students to come there, they're not even including any black students in those commercials. They have everybody else in the commercials except for black students to recruit to attend this so-called HBCU. Prairie View, I used to have to go on Prairie View's campus like once a week. It looked like the United Nations out there. You see every some kind of body out there, include students and staff. So, I mean, it's just not like the universities, the setting, the milieu is just not all black. It's not conducive to black studies or anything like that. So, I mean, what do we do?
See, when Malcolm said, when you want coffee to be weakened, you pour what? Milk into it.
Cream in it. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Cream into it. Oh. So, you know, like, we're talking about the game of the oppressor. They swear they know it's like a book. So, mm-hmm. I believe these students have been inspired by the teachings of Malcolm. Thanks be to God for you to have played that magnificent voice of Malcolm, because you see, Marcus Garvey even said, "You may come for me, but beware of my cubs." Mm. These are Marcus Garvey's cubs. Mm. Now, before these students go another route to get justice, at least they're going about it in nonviolent protest. They haven't taken up guns yet. But we're talking about Michael Brown died a death that even a dog wouldn't be put to death that way.
Right.
Kill a dog that way and leave the body out on the hot boiling sun for hours on end.
Yeah.
It's unconscionable, other than the fact that they never saw black people as human beings.
No.
You know, they saw us as subhuman, because it's still in the Constitution. We're 3/5. So when, see, if we don't get that amended in the Constitution before Obama leaves office, they'll never be taken, stricken out of the Constitution. And Obama hasn't got the foresight. He hasn't got the foresight to even know that when he first became president, he was supposed to have pardoned Jack Johnson as well as Marcus Garvey, and then to have it amended in the Constitution where it said that we are 3/5. It didn't dawn on him. He doesn't care. He doesn't care. He doesn't care to know that we are the only ethnic group that is this vicious, saying that we are 3/5. No other race is given this kind of explanation of part of their humanity.
Yeah. Hey, Kansi, are you familiar with this case that went to the Supreme Court, Missouri Gaines v. Canada? Let me just share this with everyone, and then I want to play the clip regarding the football player strike. Okay, this is Missouri Gaines v. Canada, 1938, was a United States Supreme Court decision holding that states that provided a school to white students had to provide in-state education to blacks as well. States could satisfy this requirement by allowing blacks and whites to attend the same school or creating a second school for blacks. Okay, the registrar at the law school of the University of Missouri, Sidewoods in Canada, refused admission to Lloyd Gaines because he was an African American. At the time, there was no law school specifically for African Americans within the state. Gaines cited that this refusal violated his 14th Amendment right. The state of Missouri had offered to pay for Gaines' tuition at an adjacent state law school, which he turned down. Okay, the issue. In light of the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment, does Missouri violate this clause when it affords whites the ability to attend law school in state while not affording the same right to blacks, and instead forcing them to attend adjacent states for their law education? Result. Writing for the majority, Chief Justice Charles Evan Hughes held that when the state provides legal training, it must provide it to every qualified person to satisfy equal protection. It cannot send them to other states, nor can it condition that training for one group of people, such as blacks, on levels of demand from that group. Key to the court's conclusion was that there was no provision for legal education of blacks in Missouri, which is where Missouri law guaranteeing equal protection applies. To the court, sending Gaines to another state would have been irrelevant. Justice James C. McReynolds' dissent emphasized a body of case law with sweeping statements about state control of education before suggesting the possibility that, despite the majority opinion, Missouri couldn't still deny Gaines' admission. Okay. So, let me give the analysis. This decision does not quite strike down separate but equal education as upheld in Plessy versus Ferguson, 1896. Instead, it provides that if there is only a single school, students of all races are eligible for admission, thereby striking down segregation by exclusion where the government provides just one school. Though this case didn't go as far as B versus Board of Education 1954, Brown versus Board of Education 1954, it was a step in that direction. This decision is very significant because it marks the beginning of the Supreme Court's reconsideration of the separate but equal standard made by the Plessy decision in 1896. This case was brought to suit by the NAACP on behalf of Lloyd Gaines and aimed to test the constitutionality of segregation. In this case, the Supreme Court did not overturn Plessy v. Ferguson or violate the separate but equal precedent, but began to concede the difficulty and near impossibility of a state maintaining segregated black and white institutions, which could never be truly equal. Therefore, it can be said that this case helped forge the legal framework for the United States Supreme Court's landmark 1954 decision, Brown versus Board of Education, which banned segregation in public schools. Despite the initial victory claimed by the NAACP after the Supreme Court had ruled in Gaines's favor and ordered the Missouri Supreme Court to reconsider this case, Gaines was nowhere to be found. When the University of Missouri soon after moved to dismiss the case, the NAACP did not oppose the motion. Okay, you know Gaines was nowhere to be found because they killed him, right? Okay, so that's what happened. Yeah, but press star 6-1 if you would like to speak. I'm going to play this clip. And then, let's see, we'll take a call. Let me play this clip and get us all together here, and we'll be ready to continue on. Okay, let's see, here we go. This is a clip. Missouri football players.
Do not blame us for systematic oppression, Tim Walz. And do not.
The Mizzou president under fire tonight by a growing list of high-profile people, including head coach Gary Pinkel and now the Missouri governor. Many members of the football team are today on strike. Good evening. I'm Amy Holly. Mizzou football players on strike this afternoon. They say over racism on MU's campus, and they're vowing not to play until the university's president steps down. But Tim Wolf this afternoon gave no indication that he plans to do that. Wolf released this statement this afternoon addressing the controversy, saying, quote, "It is clear to all of us that change is needed, and we appreciate the thoughtfulness and passion which have gone into the sharing of concerns." In the statement, Wolf says he and his administration have been working around the clock to address the racism on campus, and the university is already working on a plan to do just that, to correct it. He says many of the students' demands are met in that plan, and the Board of Curators approved it over the summer. The university hopes to announce that plan in the spring sometime. Wolf says in the meantime, he plans to keep an open dialogue about the issues affecting that campus. The president not only releasing that statement today as the pressure mounts, but also faced a vocal group of protesters on Friday night when he visited UMKC's campus.
Systematic oppression is because you don't believe that you have the equal opportunity for success.
You don't believe.
Well, a bystander shot that video, posted it on YouTube this weekend. Wolf told protesters on the Kansas City campus that systematic oppression is because you don't believe that you have equal opportunity for success. Well, that, of course, set off the crowd. The racial climate at MU has been tumultuous for months, but a growing number of students believe the university hasn't reacted appropriately or quickly enough. So a graduate student announced several days ago that he was undertaking a hunger strike until there is change. And some of the key incidents that have increased those tensions started back in April. Racial slurs and graffiti found at a residence hall. That graffiti did include a swastika. And then in September, the president of the Missouri Students Association says he was called a racial slur. And then in October, somebody disrupted the Legion of Black Collegians 2015 homecoming royalty court rehearsal. using more racial slurs in that incident. Well, there is growing support for the football team on this social media site this afternoon. If you follow the hashtag ConcernedStudent1950, you can see the hundreds of tweets about it already. It's one of the top trending topics here in Kansas City and the United States right now. Well, today, Mizzou coach Gary Pinkel standing by his players who say there just hasn't been enough done. He, too, is weighing in on all of this. 41 Action Sports Director Frank Bull is here on how the team and the coach is handling it all.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. It really didn't hit the national scene until this football protest. As a matter of fact, Amy, this huge story regionally, but it exploded nationally when the Mizzou football team got involved. They were supposed to practice today to prepare for Saturday's game against BYU at Arrowhead, but that was canceled. Now Saturday's primetime game against BYU is in dire jeopardy. This tweet shows over 30 members of the team locked arm in arm in solidarity because they feel Wolf has either ignored or mishandled racist incidents on campus. After canceling practice, Pinkel tweeted out this morning, 11 o'clock, the Mizzou family stands as one. We are united, and we are behind our players. And one player told reporters he and his teammates want to play, but standing up against racism is one of the most important things they could ever do.
Jason, were you guys scheduled to have practice today or anything? And you're not having enough?
We're not having much.
Any idea when you will?
Whenever this gets resolved.
If Wolf doesn't resign or isn't removed from office and the players continue their boycott, Saturday's game against BYU will be canceled. That means MU will forfeit, and they will owe BYU $1 million for breach of contract. But here's the real problem. Long after Tim Wolf's situation is resolved, the cloud of racism is going to remain in Columbia, and it won't just be used against the school's athletic programs during recruiting. It'll be used against the university itself as they try to attract gifted minority students to all aspects of academic life. And Amy, they better get this thing resolved in a hurry, make sure that cloud goes away.
Which means it could affect really all people on Missouri's campus.
Everybody and everybody on campus, mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sister
they are
Black
ready
Rose.
To, say what?
Yeah, this Scotty, I had to chime in there.
Hey, hey, Scott.
Hey,
hey,
everyone. I'm just so proud of them. I'm so proud of them because
when
the students down there at Clemson University in South Carolina, and I got an opportunity to interview one of those student leaders, A.D. Carson, and they were trying to get the statute in the main building that's named after the racist white supremacist terrorist who admitted to murdering black people, lynching black people. I mean, he murdered black people. Tillman, Benjamin Tillman. There's a good book called The Reconstruction of White Supremacy. It's about Ben Tillman, who was a senator, a U.S. senator. He also helped found Clemson, and as well as another college that's across the border in North Carolina. I can't remember the name of it. But I said during that broadcast and during that time was that I just wish those Clemson University, whether they were basketball players, football players, or whatever, because the football field is on the plantation. It's where the plantation used to be. That's where they play at. And I was like, man, the money that these black students, athletes, bring into these colleges, we're talking about $1 billion a year industry. Not that we ain't talking about pro sports and the students ain't even getting paid. Okay. And so if they stood with the other students like these student athletes are doing with the other students at Missouri, you see, they getting some action, right? They getting some movement. So I just want to say I'm so proud of those young people.
I too am very, very proud of them. It took for these football players to get involved. Now, what this news reporter, if you want to call them a reporter, like Cantor say, they're high-paid stenographers. If you want to call them a reporter, what she failed to mention was that the swastika was scrawled on the dorm wall with feces, so human feces. So you know they keep leaving that little major point out. Just the minor, the feces was used to scrawl that swastika on the wall. But yes, I am so proud of them. I applaud them. And Scotty, while we have you on the line, do you mind sharing that new website you started, the Proxy Racism, so that people can know how to log on to that website and sign up for the email?
Most certainly. ProxyRacism.com is a website that I launched. It's based off of a concept that I developed in, I think it was 2014, where I didn't want to use the term house nigga or anything like that, because it just sound like name calling, trying to stay codified according to the teachings or the suggestions of Neely Fuller Jr. So I had to come up with a more scientific term to describe what a lot of people call, you know, house niggatry and whatnot. But I'll just read it to you right quick, what I wrote. If you go to the website, you'll see this. It says, proxy racism. This is my definition. When non-white people practice racism and white supremacy as the proxies of racist white supremacists, while they may not have the personal, economic, political, and social power to be racist, they act as the proxy agents for white supremacists and enable systemic racism. And so that's just a short definition. I heard Brother Canty talking about the politicians. Now, you think about all the black politicians who have already endorsed, before the political process is even over, for nominating a candidate, they have already endorsed Hillary Clinton. And people could say, try to put it all on Bill Clinton, you know, people call mass incarceration, but that's a metaphor for slavery, modern day slavery. And they want to blame it all on Bill Clinton, like she didn't have no part in it. But she was out there giving speeches and drumming up support. She wrote that book.
She's Lady Macbeth.
Yeah, she wrote that book called It Takes a Village. Which she ripped off from that title off from an African proverb.
Yeah.
But in this book, she argued for zero tolerance in schools. And so if you think about what happened to the black girl, the 16-year-old black girl at the Spring Valley High School in South Carolina, that's what zero policy, that's what zero tolerance looks like. And you can thank him. And so these people, these black political congressmen and women who have already endorsed her, they are acting as her proxy agents to practice more racism. So that, I hope that it explains it. But that's what ProxyRacism.com is about, sharing stories and showing how non-white people lend aid to the system of racism and white supremacy.
Beautiful definition.
ProxyRacism.com is how people can log on.
Yes, ProxyRacism.com. You can even subscribe for updates. We're going to have polls. We're even going to have a monthly, what we call, Butter Biscuit Award. And I got that term, Butter Biscuit, from Johannin, who co-hosts New Abolitionist Radio. And what Butter Biscuits are, that is when a enslaved African was given a biscuit for informing or assisting the overseer with running the plantation. So he got crumbs off the master table. And so we will identify a proxy racist tool, white supremacy, for the month, and award them a Butter Biscuit Award.
The Butter Biscuit Award. All right. Thank you. Yeah, sure. Let me welcome in Sarah. Sarah's on the line. We have a caller.
Oh,
and yeah, and then Mother Dunning just joined us, and Brother Brown.
Good evening, how y'all doing?
Hey, Brown.
Sarah. I was listening to that excerpt from the and you know, we have to understand that all of these things that's taking place, they're taking place for a reason. And we should be adamant about understanding their nature, especially in these white colleges. You know, I looked at an excerpt, and I'm going to just share this with the listening audience. I looked at this documentary the other night about Luau Sunder. And Luau Sunder, his wife, this is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
he was a Muslim. He had a house in D.C. and one of his sects from the Muslim community, they had a gunfight. I remember it vividly because this was in the 70s. That's before the time that I wrote my letter to the Nation of Islam. Well, during that period of time, he was very, very reclusive of the media. So he left his Muslim wife, who was African, and he ended up with a white woman who was a Buddhist. Now, he went to a white school, he went to UCLA. He, you know, was very, very prominent in the athletic field and didn't do a lot of interviews or didn't see a lot of stuff on him. But it's amazing how his brother Scotty defined it so beautifully. How these proxy Negroes end up at white colleges with white women. And see, I come from the South, and I remember the CIAA. The CIAA was one of the most prominent African-American athletic leagues in the South, next to the SWAC, where Grambling is. And Grambling, Alcorn, you know, all of the black colleges. And at, during that period of time when I was growing up, some of the most prominent, and I mean prominent, athletes came from these schools. Sam Jones, Earl of Pearl Monroe, trying to think of this guy that played with North State University. Richard Pee Wee Kirkland, who came from Harlem. And, these guys came down south and went to all black schools. And during that period of time, I think Sam Jones went to Western South. But during this period of time, you know, other than Wilt Chamberlain, I think Oscar Robertson went to Cincinnati. But the majority of the best ball players that we had could not go to white schools. Now, when I look at these college games, because I love college ball because of the competition, the majority of schools that wouldn't even allow a black in there have black players. And people don't understand the economics behind it. We are making these schools millions, and I said millions, they're making billions of dollars for these schools every year. When you look at these stadiums, I look at them every Sunday. They're building stadiums to the capacity of a professional football team for college ball. And the majority of them now have black quarterbacks. I remember a black boy couldn't even afford to play quarterback. Because if you went to play quarterback for a white school, they would switch you to another position like Jackie Robinson. When he went to UCLA, they didn't want Jackie Robinson playing quarterback. They made him out of running back. Marion Motley. I mean, these are guys that nobody, you know, these are older guys that play professional sports. And now I see, and I looked at Clemson game yesterday, and I remember vividly when I visited Charleston, South Carolina. This was in May of 1973, and it was racism there, and it was very, very vibrant racism. And I remember because they still got that slave market right in there, downtown Charleston. And I remember walking through that market, you know, and it was just that my ancestors were letting me know this is where they were sold at. And there was an atmosphere, a spiritual atmosphere when I walked past there. But, you know, I was very young, and, you know, I really didn't understand as I do today. But to see these black kids, and we got black schools right now that can't even have, they made them Division I schools, and they can't win two games a year because they don't have the recruiting power. And I asked a couple of guys, you know, that I knew played ball, and I said, well, you know, where do you want to go? Man, I ain't going to no black school. I'm trying to go to North Carolina. I'm trying to go to or Duke. I'm trying to go here. I'm trying to go there. And, you know, and I said, well, why don't you go to a black school and use that same? Man, shit, I ain't going to get no playing time, and I ain't going to get on TV. Well, it just happened that the New York Knicks just signed a boy from Norfolk State University. He came up in the project. He was a very, very athletic young man. And he went, as a matter of fact, he led Norfolk State to the second round of the NCAA tournament. I think they knocked off Missouri that year, about three years ago. And, you know, they considered him to be a Cinderella team because there's a little school come from Norfolk, Virginia, and they knock off somebody that's made in the top 25 in the country. But I say that to say this. We have to reprogram our young athletes today if they're going to go to college to let them understand the proxy racism, as Brother Scott had called it, that's being used against them. And, you know, just like Dexter Mann, a lot of these guys in the past, they went to school just to play athletics and make these schools money. And a lot of them couldn't graduate. And that's the same thing today. A lot of them that go to the NBA or the NFL, they have no education. They're still using black kids today. They have been using them ever since. I remember Dab Bryant, who used to coach for Alabama. He always had an all-white team. And I think it was in 1963 or 62 that he, I think it's a black school in Alcorn State. Is that in Alabama?
Alcorn State, I can't quite recall.
Alcorn is in Mississippi. It's in Mississippi.
Okay.
Yeah, Walter
Stevens
is a graduate up there.
Yeah, Alcorn is in Mississippi, but I can't remember the school that's in Alabama. But I know Grambling is in Louisiana.
Right.
Uh-huh. Grambling is in Louisiana. But Bear Bryant, after he saw Grambling and the coach of Grambling winning all of those championships in the black league, he started slowly pulling those players. Now, when you look at Alabama football team today, same Alabama team, you understand me, they have the majority of their top players are black.
Hey, let's take a quick break. We'll have a break, Brother Brown, and then let's come back and bring Sarah in because she has something she would like to share with us. All right, we'll take a quick break.
Okay.
Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
All right, and we are back, and Sarah, welcome in. How are you, Sarah? Greetings.
Greetings to you,
hey,
on Black
Sarah. Blue. How you doing?
Hello, Ken, T. Mother Dunning, Brother Brown, as well as Scotty Reed. Greetings to you all.
Greetings.
No, I'm glad.
What are your thoughts, Sarah, on all of this that's going on?
I have to concur with Mr. Brown on everything he stated as far as our athletes go with the draining, not only the physical drain, but as well as financial drain that comes with these athletes matriculating to these all-white schools. Because I believe it was Alabama State, because that's an all-black school that Bear Bryant, he played with those players back in the day before he went ahead and he played. I believe it was USC that had the black players that he decided to play against them. But it was Alabama State University that he played. But, you know, it just goes to show we can't really blame these players if they're saying they don't want to go to these schools because it's too black and they're not going to get the play time. where are they getting that from? Isn't it our fault as parents who allow our children to be guided by people who don't have their best interests at heart? Because these coaches and these other things they have that they're exposed to from starting up from the Pee Wee League on up, where you're pushing them because everybody wants to use sports and entertainment as their lottery in order to get out of the ghetto, in order to make it into the big time. So we're using our children within which to gain this leverage, and you're letting these white coaches tell them that they must go to play to Notre Dame. They must go to play to all of these white schools within which to get, you know, seen on TV or to get the exposure. Because as Mr. Brown says, you have the CIAA, you have the MEAC, the CIAC, you have all of these different leagues that, you know, where the black colleges, they used to be played and used to be showcased in. And even whites used to come and watch and admire these athletes and they're proud of it. And then bit by bit, they start cycling them off. And as you say, you look at all of these football stadiums. Georgia's, I come from Sanford Stadium that's in Athens, Georgia. It was built off the back of black athletes, Herschel Walker, over 30 years ago when he played for them when they won their Sugar Bowl title. All of that started, they built a big multi-million dollar stadium off of these black athletes here in Athens. Because it's a football town, Athens, Georgia. That's what it's built up around. The same way as it is if you go to Tuscaloosa, Alabama, where, you know, the University of Alabama is. It's built around their athletic field. And you go to Mississippi, where Ole Miss and all of that, it's the same thing. And nobody's coming in to see white athletes play football because it's not as exciting as you see with the black athletes on the field. And they're not getting paid for these things. They're coming out of there with broken bodies. They're not even graduating with anything worthwhile that they can go into a profession once they leave their college playing years. And then what? The schools are making billions. This president, this wolf guy from Mizzou that they're trying to get him to resign. And he don't want to go. It already tells you right then and there what the board of trustees and everyone, they're backing this man, because if they had any confidence in their athletic department, because as the man said, they're looking at their bottom line, that they're going to be not going to be able to recruit the top caliber academic students as well as players to come on their team with all of what's going on there. But white people would prefer to practice racism rather than sack that president and let him go. They prefer to practice racism, keep him on there, because some or the other, he must have something on them, or they must feel that they cannot do any better by keeping this man on their payroll rather than letting him go. And black people know we always had the power within us. You know, we have always been the goose that lays the golden egg. And for somehow or the other, we don't want to exercise this ability that we have and just hold off financially, just hold out. We don't want to do that. We always give in to these racists and let them feel as if, well, we can't do better. Well, you know, we better go on back to the plantation and pick this cotton because my thing don't like chicken. You know, we need to do what we got to do. That's how we act. We act so damn mealy-mouthed about things.
I certainly agree with you on that, Sarah. And you brought up a good point in terms of how these some of the athletes won't get that play time and that air time that they're seeking. And not only are they not coming out with, a degree where they can transfer that into like a real career, even some of these young high school boys, there have been so many deaths recently and so many serious injuries of these young boys. And so they're going to have to reform this whole football, realm of football, it seems, or something is going to have to change in that arena.
Well,
I want to ask y'all too. Do y'all think that he's going to have to resign? Tim was the president. Do you think he's going to have to resign, Brother Brown, by the end of the week? Do you think he will resign by the end of the week, or what? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think they're going to make him resign based on the fact the devil was the money. He didn't take, and by him not taking a positive stance on the issue, and the school. I mean, they got four more games left. That's going to cost them $4 million.
Yep.
Or more.
More than that.
Yeah, it's going to cost, well, that's just a hypothetical guess. But I'm just saying, that's going to cost school a lot of money that they can't afford to lose. It's going to cost them a whole lot of endorsements through the commercials that they do. There's so much money tied into sports.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I want to add is this. I remember coming up as a kid. See, we had two different leagues to play in. It started like Sarah said, it started at the Pee Wee League. When I came up, we had an all-black recreation bureau in the same city, and we had a white recreation bureau, okay? Mm-hmm. Both funded by the city. And that was because of segregation in the public school. So when the schools started integrating, the same thing is going on in the college now. The black schools that were in the all-black communities, they split the players up so that the white schools could get some of the best black athletes, because at one time, all the black athletes in the city of Norfolk went to one school, and we had a powerhouse, but we were not allowed to play white schools. Once we started playing, and then they came up with this busing issue, it all revolves around integration as being the tool to separate us and make it better for them. The majority of your Heisman Trophy winners over the last 10 years have been black, and none of them uh-huh. came from black colleges. So you see, it's all about money with white folks. There's a book out called Million Dollar Slave.
Uh-huh.
And it tells the whole story of the whole athletic industry from, you know, high school, college to the pros. Now, there's a school in California, a lot of people, they did an excerpt on it one time on a documentary, that's run by the Nike industry. And they take these black boys, black kids out of the ghettos in California, put them in a school, teach them, but 90% of what they do is play basketball. They're just like a concentration camp. And, you know, they separated from their family. And Nike later on put these kids into different colleges, you know, and they end up becoming professional sports. And they play real good. And, you know, at that point, you know, they endorse Nike products. And Nike makes billions of dollars off this. Billions, you know. And like I told somebody when they asked me, did I own a pair of Nike? And I said, no, I said, because on the pair of Nikes is just like working on a plantation. We have to understand how the elements of white supremacy and racism trickle down to us in the worst way. And at the end of the day, when all is said and done, we're still ended up in the same predicament. Now, what has to be done with these athletes is that, just like we said, we have to retrain our minds to understand economics and how to buy from black people. We have to retrain the parents of these athletes to let them know that if we're going to play division, if we're going to be classified as a Division I school for whatever reason, send your son or your athletic, you know, youngster to a black school. One of the saddest stories that I ever heard, and I'll be done. Well, this young brother that was in Norfolk, he came out of the project, and he had a learning disability. He was slightly retarded. One made Parade All-Star All-American, Parade magazine. Couldn't hardly read and write. They paraded, took Booker T. Washington High School to the national championship, to the state championship, 2 years in a row. When it came time for him to be, you know, go to college, they led him around and led him around, thinking that these colleges were going to get him. And Norfolk State wanted him because Norfolk State had a program for children with disabilities. So he walked into Norfolk State, played 4 years, and ended up in the pro. But he listened to the wrong advisors. He could not pass the SAT. He could not read that good. And he ended up right back on the streets in the project. One of the best ball players. Matter of fact, he outplayed Allen Iverson. they played against each other in the AAU league. He outplayed Allen Iverson. That's how good he was. But because of poor advisement and poor grades, you know, and I was connected with the people that were instrumental in getting Allen Iverson out of jail. Yeah, I was coming there. I meant to take you over there while he was in Anthony Rose. I meant to take you over there to the brother that I worked with, who was very instrumental in getting that started, that led to Allen Iverson getting out of that trouble he was in. Yeah, his name is Brother Linwood DeBrew, and he runs a center right there on Jefferson Avenue with Iverson and Michael Vick comes from. Michael Vick come right down the street off of Jefferson Avenue in the project. I worked over there for years. But I'm just saying.
Oh, up there in Norfolk?
No, Newport News. I was all over
there. Oh, Newport area. News.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
and my aunt used to live in Newport News.
Iverson started in Newport News. He got put out of school. So what he did, that's how he ended up at Hampton. But he's originally from Newport News.
Okay.
Yeah, he's originally from Newport News. And yes.
Right.
And you know, like I said, he was one of the best athletes to come out of the area. And by him being locked up, what happened was, and it's a documentary that show all of it. We the racist mayor of Hampton did not want to let this boy, he fought diligently not to let this boy out of jail. Put him on a city farm out there, you know, working with animals and all that mess. And, you know, there was a lawyer, a Jewish lawyer, I can't remember his name. Me and him met some years ago. He was his lawyer, but the guy that instituted this was a guy named Linwood DeBrew. And we got together and said, you know what, we got to get this kid, because the kid had too much going for him. And he comes from a bad situation. But the thing about it was that we knew he could make it out of that ghetto. So what happened was when the New York Yankees drafted him, the Yankees wanted him to play baseball. And the Yankees wanted him to play baseball, plus he was a two-star, he was a three-sport athlete. He played every sport on the field and played it well. I mean, not just good, well, he played it exceptionally well. And when the Yankees wanted him when he was 18 years old, when he got in that trouble, Doug Wilder was the governor, and he gave him on when he was going out, he gave him clemency and got him out of jail, and that's how he ended up at Georgetown. Because after that incident. Because he had scholarships to every major school in this country for baseball, football, and basketball. But after that incident with the white kids at that bowling alley, nobody would take him but John Thompson. John Thompson took him to Georgetown, and then, you know, the rest is history. It's the same thing with this boy that played for, that came from Chesapeake, Virginia, Alonzo Mourning. Alonzo Mourning.
Hold on, Brother Brown. Wait a minute. Hold on. Let's bring Mother Dunning in because she's been waiting patiently. She has
had an
opportunity to speak. So, Mother Dunning?
Yes. I was listening.
How are you?
Fine.
How you doing?
Hello, Dunning. How you doing, Mother Dunning?
Fine. You know what? I was listening at Brother Brown. I was listening at Sarah and everybody. But my biggest thing, I am so proud of these young songs. Black men, they realize now they have the power. They have them right where they want them. All they have to do is stay unified. And if they stay unified, they will break the white man down. Because the white man they are not gonna let that dean of that school cause them to lose money. And they are not going to let that dean of that school, they will go crazy over football. And by the star running back coming out and joining with them, that's an A+. The star running back of that team said he would not play anymore until the dean is gone. So if they stay unified, and I hope this tape...
Dean or the president.
The president. I hope this tape president around the world to all the different colleges that let the black kids see we got the power. They making you and making money off of you. And if they and if these stick together, and we, I just pray they stick together. And if they stick together, this, you're going to see this a bunch of more times. This will not be a one-time thing.
You think it'll spread around to other universities?
That is correct. That is correct. That's what I'm saying.
Do you think that the president will resign by the end of this week before this big Saturday game?
If the boys stay unified, yes. The white man is not going to, they're not going to let one white man cause them to lose millions and millions of dollars. And just like Brother Brown them said, other peoples are watching. Other peoples are not going to come to that school where there's problems at. So he got to go. But the main thing is they stay unified. He going to go.
Yeah.
That's the key. You know, because, and then I like to say one more thing. And you take a lot of these kids, they go to these white schools. You know why they go? These children come from the private, they come from the slums. They come from one single parent home, and their number one goal is to make money for their parents. They get their parents out of that situation. Whenever you see a child doing that, their number one goal, they said, my goal is to get my mother out of this. My goal to put my family in this place. That is their number one goal. They go wherever they think that they can get the money to get their family out of that situation. And that's why they choose, they're going to choose wherever they can go to get the most money and the best situation for them and their family. And you can't blame them for that.
Oh, no.
We can't blame them. But like they said, we don't have, I just wish black schools can get together like the white schools. And Brother Brown, you are so right when you said about Alabama. There was a time like Bear Bryant when he put how it all started. Now I do know this much: how it got started. They said was they had a football game and a basketball game, and he put in all these black players, He took out all the white ones and put in all the black ones. This was in a basketball game, and they beat them so bad. And that's when the white folks saw how great these young men were. And that's when they really started recruiting them. And so my hat's off to them. That's all I can say. They learned they got the power. And I hope they stay united.
What happened was that when Bear Bryant started recruiting black players, he knew he was going to have some adversity, because that was around the same time that this guy named James Meredith was trying to enter, I think, the University of Mississippi. He was trying to enter Ole Miss, I think. And that's when somebody shot at him that time. He was on the steps and the National Guard had taken up that enrolling school. And that's when Bear Bryant, that was in the 60s, that's when Bear Bryant started going back in the woods getting these high school balls, recruiting these black ball players. But one of the other elements was that, you know, when we look at college sports and high school sports now being money-making industries, it goes back to slavery, you know, and that's why the guy wrote the book called The Million Dollar Slave. LeBron James could not go to college because of what Mother Dunham just said. His mother took money when he was in high school. Bought her an Escalade, bought her a house. You understand me? And once you take that money, you know, you can't go to college. You have to go to the draft. You know, and he's been an exceptional player, but now his head is so big, he forgot where he came from. And the little bit of money that he said he contributed back to the community, see, like Scott said,
get amnesia.
Yeah, he got amnesia. Now he said he's giving a certain amount of money to scholarship. Yeah,
sure.
But look at the endorsements that white folks have made off of him. Look at the endorsements they have made off Shaquille O'Neal. He's old now. You know, look at the endorsements that they made off Michael Jordan. You know, these guys are being used as modern day slaves. See, the white men have no problem paying our kids $1 million. But like I said, years ago, if I can afford
Brother Brown. We want to let Sarah say a little something. We only have a little bit more time, so we want to make sure everybody gets a chance to talk. So Sarah share her piece.
Okay. No. What Mr. Brown was speaking on William Rosen that wrote the book The $40 Billion Slave. You know, I believe he's the fourth editor for Time, for the New York Times. But you know, we can dance around this and saying all that we want about you can't blame the children. But it's like the lottery winners. Most lottery winners who win the lottery, they end up being broke within 5 years after winning that big jackpot. And we can see the same thing happen with these players who manage to get drafted into the pros. And once their career is washed up, they end up flat broken and busted because their money was not properly managed. And to me, we could avoid all of this if we started these children off from home where you have someone talking to the parents, someone black and responsible telling these parents, okay, your children might have a potential within which to go into professional sports. We need to start telling you from right now, we need to stick with you, get someone to be with the family so that anytime you have to meet with any of these coaches or whatever they want to talk to you about, someone is there to whisper in their ear and have their best interest. Because these college coaches, they're there to look out for the school's best interest, bottom line, which is white people's money. Because as they're already saying, Missouri, they're going to, if they forfeit the game to Brigham Young that they're supposed to play this weekend, that's over $1 million that they're going to have to play Brigham Young for that forfeit. And it's going to be a loss in their column. So they're not about to lose that kind of money. They're going to have to get that president, get him a retirement package they can put together for him and push him on out the door so that they can meet their Saturday deadline and not have to pay that $1 million fine that they're going to be looking at paying. But we, as parents who are responsible for these children, we have got to stop letting these children make decisions on their own, as we see with that Milwaukee Bucks player who went into that jewelry store to buy that Rolex watch. And even though the cops and everything got called on him, went into that store. We've got to stop repeated offenses of these type of things happening to our children. We've got to stop doing it.
Oh, I agree with you on that. Oh my goodness, that's so true. I love that. I love that what you said, starting out early, having someone in the ear of these parents that has their best interest, that can help and guide them, because as has been stated during this call, some of these children, they come from impoverished homes, and so maybe the parents are not aware of certain fiscal matters, and so a financial advisor would be quite helpful to assist them or somebody. I mean,
you know, I think y'all remember Tony Dorsett that played for the Dallas Cowboys years ago.
Oh yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you know, he came from the University of Pittsburgh, but all the money that he made in endorsements, he went totally broke by somebody, some white con artist, telling him to invest his money in oil fields. And whatever he made, he lost every dime of his money. So many ball players, they make this money with these endorsements, like Sir said, but they end up totally broke. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to understand that we need advisors from a legal perspective. Somebody sit down, because see, these guys that go after these ball players, they're just like sharks in the water. They watch your kids from 10th grade, 9th grade when they're playing ball, and they watch them all the way up till they graduate. Then they say, well, okay, we're going to push him to go to UCLA. We're going to push him to go to Georgetown. We're going to push him to go to North Carolina. Then they sit around, they help the families, you know, and most of them are Jews, believe it or not. Most of these sports lawyers are Jews. These guys that are coming after these kids, they know, they give them anything they want while they're in college. Like this young boy, Anthony Davis, you know. And these kids go hardship. They go hardship because, as Mother Dunner said, they need the money. But we need to come in our community and set up some elements that when we see these kids play ball and we visit these high school games, that should be upon us to see which kid has the athletic prowess to excel at this level. Introduce ourselves to the community and let them know about the shots that's coming after their kids.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I wonder if Dr. Boyce Watkins does any kind of financial consulting with athletes.
Watkins does financial boot camp, but it's not only y'all, Mr. Brown, not only the people who we see have a potential, but all athletes, period, because they might not make the cut in order to go into the pros, but they might go into anything. You have to tell them about the pitfalls that await them, white girls in particular, because the white men sick their dogs on brothers. They sick them on things, but they might not make it into sports, but they might decide to go into business, become a doctor, a dentist, a lawyer, whatever. And white women, they could smell potential like an animal smell raw meat. And they could be all over that.
Goodness, yes.
But that's what happened to the young man. That's what happened to the young man.
Hold on, Brother Brown. Hold on, Brother Brown. Let Mother Dunn talk, because she really hasn't had a chance to talk much.
Let me say this one word. I want everybody to come in on yes. Now, and I know this kind of getting off our subject a little bit, but I was thinking about the black figure skater, Debbie Thomas. Now, how can she go broke? She was on TV the other day, and she's a black woman, and she went and married two white men. Now she's on TV talking about she's broke. She's living.
Well, that's why she broke. It's not a question about this.
Then she said she's living in a
Halle Berry gonna mess around and be broke too. She better get out here and make a few more movies, because she's gonna be broke too. What? She's gonna be a real crackhead after a while, like she started out on Jungle Fever.
I think she's on the threshold right now. I'm having a nervous breakdown. I saw her face. She looked quite agitated.
But to get back to Debbie Thomas or what Mother Dunn exists. But Debbie Thomas isn't she a medical doctor? How could she be almost broke and almost houseless? Because she has a medical
She's supposed to be a doctor.
Well, you gotta pay your bills.
Well, okay, well, a surgeon makes even more money than a regular generic doctor.
But what she's saying, Phil, she's saying the white man is going to get cousins on her for child support.
Of course.
We'll pick
right back up, Mother Donna. We'll pick right back up with that, and then we'll come to Canty, and then we'll come back to Brother Brown, and we'll get ready to close out with Sarah. And we have a little bit more time, but let's just take a quick break.
This is Brother Elliot, host of Time for an Awakening, and you're listening to Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennium.
right, Delta. Now, what were you saying about Debbie Thompson?
Okay, yeah. It's been all over the news. And Debbie Thomas is saying that she don't have any money because, and this, and I'm tying this in too with the ball players too. Like how a lot of the young black boys go and get the white girls and it leave them broke. Well, Debbie Thomas is saying that she's broke. She had two white husbands and had kids from both of these husbands. Both of the husbands took the kids away from her, making her pay child support. Now she says she's living in a trailer with another white man care of his two kids. But this is what I'm saying. I don't feel sorry for Debbie Thomas. She did just what she deserved by running over to the other side. But this is what I'm saying. This is what a lot of these white parents teach their, and we need to teach our black boys. Stop running every time you get some money, running to the other side and taking that money and putting it back in their community. So just another thing why the young boys go broke, because a lot of them white girls, they family wouldn't let them have nothing to do with black boys. But if they see a black boy that's got some money and no business sense, the white man will get in and try to run it. And I'm going to say this, and then I'm going to be quiet. I had a friend, me and her both grew up in the project. She married a her husband went off and played pro ball, and you can look him up. His name is Kenny Ray Johnson. He played for the Atlanta Falcons. He played for them for about 7 or 8 years. Then he went on and played with the Houston Oilers. So all together, he played 11 years. And he broke to this day right now. He broke. And he said that his number one problem is he didn't know how to manage his money. He said that he wished he'd have had somebody to really truly help him how to manage his money. And that's a lot of our young men's problems. We don't have nobody to help us. But the white women would send their daughters in to run it for the black boys. And that's my thought.
Oh, all the time. They sure will. They will send those white girls right in, the fathers, the mothers. I mean, they have a whole plan. Yeah. And a lot of black people, especially these black men, they're just oblivious to the fact that these people, like Sarah mentioned, they can smell potential. They smell it in a black man.
And they will jump on it. You see, when they realize... Mm-hmm. It takes black people too long to realize that black men are seen as gladiators, and that the modern day gladiators, and white women will be put up there because the white man would rather give a black man a white woman, but you know that sooner or later this white woman will drain this black man. But she is put up there to exploit and to extract what all she can get from this black man. Then she drops him like a hot potato, and he's one of it. What did I do wrong? Why she did it to me? You know, these people are devils. They're not called devils for nothing. They are demented. They are very much devious. It's all the above that will cause you to lose your mind, aside from your life.
Well, you know, not getting off the subject of sports, Mahalia Jackson fell into that trap. She married a white man and he broke her. So she died.
Mm.
The gospel singer.
Yeah.
Brother Brown, I did not know that. Are you serious? I did not know Mahalia Jackson was married to a white man.
Yeah.
You know, Eartha Kitt said the reason why she married a black white man is because she said she was dating. Now, I'm not sure if this is true. I just read this. But, Eartha Kitt said that she liked Harry Belafonte, and Harry Belafonte told her she couldn't do anything for him. He was going to be with a white woman because white women could advance his career, and she couldn't do anything for him. So she said when people asked her, Eartha Kitt said that when people asked her why didn't she marry a black man, she said because all the white women had. And so she went and married a white man. Because people that's like Harry Belafonte and Sidney Poitier, she said all of them were white women. So she said, who was she going to marry? So she said people were trying to come down on her about marrying a white man, but the black men of her day, they were interested in white women. So
We always thought
Ella Fitzgerald was the same thing too. She married a white man, and Ella Fitzgerald was married to a white man, and he outlived her, and he got control of her estate. I don't know whose hands it's into right now. Josephine Baker, you know, we can go down all the list of those where these black women were married to these white men, and these white men end up siphoning off all of their fortune, and they end up doing nothing after the family.
Or either they end up dying off like Dorothy Dandridge. You know who I think was passing? And I want y'all to tell me, do y'all think this person was passing? I believe Marilyn Monroe was passing. I believe she was black. Was she black?
I don't know. I don't think she was black. But then again,
if you check her lineage, there is a possibility she has black blood in her because she was originally from the South or parts thereof.
And then Carol Channing just come out that she was black, remember?
Oh, those big lips ain't there for nothing. And she didn't have operations. Those are natural big lips. Yeah. Yeah, but Marilyn could have been a black woman. No, she wasn't.
We can't take all these trashy ass white women who acted as
What'd you say, Sarah? No, she wasn't. You said she was, huh?
We cannot take these tramps and then all of a sudden because they're trampish and say they're black women. She was a white woman who was
a white woman.
She was a white whore who was a passed around. She was not a black woman. She is not black. She wasn't passed and she's 100% cracker. She's a cracker 100%.
That's right. She was a poor cracker.
Yeah, JFK said he had. JFK and Bobby Kennedy was sharing her. JFK said he.
But that was just two of them. She was a pass around pack.
She was a pass around all over,
you know. And when it was time for her demise, they killed her.
And look at Diana Ross. Diana Ross won't marry nobody black either.
That's right.
And ugly Whoopi Goldberg won't marry nobody black.
Whoopi Goldberg got a man trapped in a body waiting to be released. That's her problem. So I don't think she would ever want anyone that's straight because she's got this problem with that sexual identity of a man trapped in her body. And she has this desire. Only for white flesh, thank you. That happens to be a white woman.
Well, she said that nobody black ever found her to be attractive, and so that is why white men found her attractive. We've got to admit that we got problems with darker skinned black men or darker skinned black women.
That's why we gotta play hard. That's right.
Like
we gotta play hard for
all of them. We make them feel like outsiders. So they end up in the enemy camp. So we have got
to hope and pray that Viola Davis don't switch over to become either gay or only with white men, thank you, or white women because
But she's mad. Her husband is a black man. Viola Davis is a black man.
Well, I hope that she cannot forget that bridge because sometimes when they get to smell themselves, the black partner don't. It's not good enough for them anymore. Like Clarence Thomas. His first wife was a black woman. His first wife was a black woman. But when he began smelling himself, he became a Republican conservative and married a white woman who looked like a Steinway piano mover. I mean, a Conrad Grand piano mover.
Clarence Thomas' two wives, the one that he married when he was a student at Yale, she's a white woman. Because he had a child with her. And then this one that he married to, which is a cousin of Barbara Bush that he's married to now, they look like a linebacker. She is a white woman, so there's two white women.
That's exactly what you look like, too.
Ooh, y'all cold-blooded, boy. Y'all don't get these people.
I'll tell you who has a white woman, and you know she was screwed up. Try kind of, at least I call her kind of sleazy. She's married. She lives with a white woman.
Yeah, she's a dyke.
We got a lot. Look at Angela Davis. Look at Angela Davis and all of them. They waited until they get up in age before they decide to play that switch hitting game. All of a sudden, she was married. Well, Angela Davis was married to a white man anyway. She was married to the head of the Communist Party USA. That's who she was married to.
So she decided to make it official and just decided to become having some white woman to be licking all over her now by becoming a lesbian.
But you know what, Sarah? Wesley Snipes said the same thing. He said that the reason why he dates outside of black women is because before he became
they said
he was ugly, he was too black, and all, because he used to date Halle Berry for a hot minute. And but I think she was, you know, like one of the few black women that he dated. That was, you know, before they became famous megastars and all that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Wesley Snipes said the same thing, that black women didn't find him attractive. So, you know, hey, he dates a lot of Asian women and stuff like that. So, man, I'm not mad at him because I know how we are. That's how we do. Because I'm not gonna lie, I don't too much care for short people. Not you know, too short. You can't be shorter than me, you know. And so I know I have my little prejudice.
Because we do, we could tell them you're black and you're ugly. So that's the way that it is right there in a row that you tell somebody, and you know, you would shatter their personality. And we got to stop doing it.
And I love black skin. I like skin.
Me too.
So black.
I love dark skin men. I like the yellow ones.
I like the real black. You can't see nothing but the white of their eyes. That's the kind of black I like.
The white of their eyes and teeth.
I love me some dark chocolate too. I do not own. Yeah. I've always liked dark chocolate men. And so, because no.
I do too. So we think that. I didn't hear Sarah's opinion though. So Sarah, do you think that this coach will resign by Saturday? Did you say you think he will?
I think he's gonna go. He's gonna go because when they're looking, the Mets, if he already announced in the news that they're gonna be paid, they forfeit the Brigham Young game, they have to pay Brigham Young that $1 million. So they're not going to be looking at giving away that type of money and the bad publicity that's associated with it. They're gonna give him a nice retirement package and they're gonna push him on out the door between now and Saturday. They're gonna get rid of him.
Have they started a petition?
I don't know if they started a petition or not.
Football, when a football team is refusing to get suited up and get on the field, and you keep hearing about all of these teams, they start calling and say, hey, if y'all don't play us, y'all owe us X number, and Mr. Brown says with the advertisers and all of that, that they're going to have to owe some money to. They're going to get him out the door.
That's money.
Whatever his retirement package is going to be, it's going to be less compared to what they're losing with these advertisers as well as all of these teams that they have to pay. Mm-hmm. Plus, they're going to, a forfeiture is a loss. So they're already going to end up on an automatic loss that they're getting.
Absolutely. Now, Brother Brown says something. And Brother Brown, if you could just repeat that. You said it was a solution to the young high school students going to black colleges. How can we recruit more black students, more black athletes to go to the black universities and colleges and get that airtime? What was that you said? Because maybe that's something that could really help and change the situation.
What we have to do is set up these black think tanks to understand that we can catch these kids in the embryonic stages, whether it's academics or whether it's sports, and lead them to black schools, you know, to become whatever professional field you want to be in. And you look at this little girl that's doing a tumbling thing, this little
Simone, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, now what's going to happen to her is that these shocks, these Jewish shocks, these snipes, they're going to come in at her with these endorsements, you know, and she's going to make millions of dollars. But the thing about it is that they're going to manage her money for her. This is the time that we in the black community say to her mother, don't mess with them Jews. I learned my lesson years ago by working for them. They're some of the slickest people on this planet when it comes to a problem. They're slick. And they know all angles. And, you know, I was young and I fell for some of the angles. I didn't fall for the angles, but I knew what the angles were. But these are the people
that become your agents, you know. And once they become your agents, they get these kids and corral them when they're young. They know that they can get endorsements from these companies because they're owned by Jews.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And they know they have the TV rights because they're owned by Jews. So once you go out there like that, you know, we have to inform our people and educate them that we don't want to, like, we don't want to end up broke. And they had, most of these athletes, believe it or not, and it hasn't been brought out, they have to sign a clause in their contract that they will not take their $1 million money and endorse anything to empower Black America. Now, I learned this from somebody that I can't call his name, who was an athlete, and he said that, you know, there was a clause in his contract. And he said that, you know, he didn't play for 3 years in the NFL, played for the Minnesota Vikings. And he worked with me, but he had a car accident. He's deceased now. But he said that there was a clause in the contract that said if I became a star player with the Minnesota Vikings, that I would not take my money back to the Black community and endorse anything that would empower Black America. That's how I found out about it. So when these guys make these $100 million contracts or whatever, you never see them bring any money back. And the majority of them come from white schools, but that's where they donate their money to the alumni to upgrade these schools. And, you know, right here where I live at in Maryland, the University of Maryland Eastern Shore, it used to be mostly your Black ball players came, football players, a lot of them came right from this college in this little town of Princeton, Maryland. You know, and they had one of the best football teams in CIAA. Schnell, Roger Brown, all these guys that played professional football in the 60s, they went to University of Maryland Eastern Shore. They disbanded their team years ago when there was a rape on campus. It was a football player that came from New Jersey. They tried to get their team back. And the state of Maryland would not endorse them to build a stadium. But they turned around right down the street from where I live at Salisbury University. They just built a multi-million-dollar stadium. And a friend of mine who my advisor in the community college that I went to, her son played ball, and he was a good ball player. So I asked her, I said, when time came for him to graduate from high school, I said, what school are you going to let him go to? She said, well, his father wanted him to go to a black school. She said, but the guy from Salisbury University, which is the predominantly white school, said that, you know, you could use him. And, you know, it hurt me because, you know, our people, and then she said, because he has intentions on being a Rhodes Scholar. So I asked her, I said, a Rhodes Scholar? She said, yeah. I asked her, did she know who Cecil Rhodes was? And she said, no. I said, well, you look up Cecil Rhodes, and you look up Rhodesia, and you find out what Cecil Rhodes did to our people. I said, because once your son becomes a Rhodes Scholar, white men will always own him. It's just like the Boule. So we have to educate our people and let them know the pitfalls of this. You know, but I think that we need us who are conscious right here on this radio, we can formulate something right through my organization. And we can say, okay, if there's a kid in your community that need to be, you know, his parents need to be talked to, I will make it my business to come and educate them so that these children don't fall into these pitfalls. Because it's dangerous for them. Because we've already seen the handwriting on the wall. Our ancestors don't show us stuff just to be shown. They don't show us the daughter dances, the Halle Berrys, you know, the Dwight Gootens, all these people who have came before us, all these guys who have got caught up in the traps. They show us that for a reason. And it's up to us to understand the messages that have been given to us by our ancestors. It's just like Sister Sharon, when I told you about Credo Mutua. A lot of people are not aware of this Zulu shaman who our ancestors have placed on this planet and given him wisdom and knowledge of how the creation of African people started. You know, and people laugh at him and they look at him, well, he's just crazy. No, he's not crazy. We need to understand that all of us are on a mission. And our mission is liberation and freedom for the Uluhu, which means independence of our people. And it's time for us to get busy and be about our business.
Well, I want to make sure that I give out my condolences to this little girl and her family here in Houston, Texas.
Did she die?
I think it was Friday. No, she didn't die.
Okay.
There was like this humongous brawl with these young girls. I mean, it is just horrible. These young girls were brawling in the street. God knows over what. Who knows? They were fighting. They had their little do-rags on their head, and they had those little sleep bonnets. Like, they went home right after school and put do-rags on. So I don't know what that was all about. But they were just brawling in the street. And then somebody in a gray car ran over one of the little girls. I guess she must have fallen down, or maybe she was near this gate or something. And they just ran. The car just ran over the girl. I mean, you could just see it. The little girl was under the car. So I think she's had like about 5 or 6 surgeries. Her pelvis was shattered, so she probably won't be able to have children. And so she's in the hospital now. But I think the little girl is only like
where
about 14. This is right here in Houston. Right here in Houston, around the corner from where my friend lives. And I need to give her a call because
I haven't seen that video.
Yeah, I'll send it to you, Mother Dunnan. It probably didn't make national news, but I saw it here on Houston News. I read it on my
phone.
Yeah, so she didn't die, but she's in the hospital. Did I send it to you, Brother Brown?
Yeah, you sent it to me. I read it. When I sent it to me, I was at work.
I
thought what I was doing and I read it, you know. And, you know, we just have to understand that we need to retrain the minds of our youth about this violent attitude that they have. You know, because they're so adamant about fighting one another with that, and because of self hatred. And like Cyril said, you already been told you were ugly, you ain't no good. You know? And that goes back to the movie of Color Purple. You know, all of the negative elements that was in that movie, you understand me, to show some of the degrees of what we go through as African people.
Who's to tell these young girls at an early age they've got 3 strikes against them, their sex, their class, and their race? Who's to tell them that?
You said who's to tell them what, Candy?
I said who's to tell these young girls they've got 3 things going against them in this society? Their sex, their class, and their race.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a hell of a feat to deal with. That's a hell of a feat to deal with because you got no pride in the home. There's no one telling you who you are in the home. Definitely not getting into school. And you're certainly not getting into churches. So all 3 institutions are failing our young people. And we have now began, we're breeding a subculture that anything will do under the sun. You get these young girls got more mileage on them sexually that make it look like you ain't doing nothing and you're twice that these girls age. And they have no concern about showing their cleverness, they have to show their cleavage. Like these brothers they show their butt, these young girls show their cleavage. And it's
let's also talk about the young black men who run around with blonde streaks in the middle of their damn head. I mean, what's up with that?
This football player from the Giants got this blonde streak in his hair. You know, it's so sad, man. Young people don't know who they are, and they don't want to identify with their blackness, anything but black. anything but black.
Yeah, but if you look at Lil Wayne, they had Lil Wayne on video today. He was down in his hometown today in New Orleans. And if you see the way Lil Wayne dressed, it is so sad. And this is where these kids get this from. They are emulating a lot of these movie stars. And a lot of these movie stars, these hip-hop artists, is putting this mess out. And these kids are emulating this.
That's right.
Because they're the Pied Pipers. That's what they are paid to push. They are paid to push self-destruction into the black community, the music and the style of dresses, androgynous dress. We're male and female wearing the same set of clothing. And these air spirits are dope, not only the blonde streak down the middle of the men's head, but these earrings, you know, these babies. I've seen, you know, infants in arms, like one-year-old boys with a stud in their ears. You know, I don't know what mother could be thinking that you're going to want to put a stud in your baby's ear, your male child's ear, and he's a baby.
Well, if you look in the Smith Bible Dictionary, and I ran across this years ago, it tells you that when it's a spiritual element of enslavement, which means that when a black male pierces his ear, the piercing ears of a male. You understand me? And I showed it to my wife tonight. She was shocked.
Hold on, Brother Brown. Come on, wrap that up because we got like 30 seconds before we close out. Wrap it up.
Well, we'll do that on another show then. We'll talk about this, these earrings and the black male on another show. And
that's a good topic, Brother Brown.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll do that in the blonde streaks in the hair. And why are our black males looking like they're not black males?
Well, close us out with some thanks to the ancestors then, Brother Brown. Give us a good close out. And give us something to take us on through this week. Where's the power?
I now come before my ancestors and I ask permission to speak. I say, I thank the ancestors for the unity of the people on this radio program. I thank the ancestors for Brother Scott, Sister Shira, Mother Dorothy, Sister Sarah, Brother Canty, and Mother Hattie. And I just ask that our unification will continue to be for the renewal and independence of our people on all fronts, and that we continue to come together weekly and deal with the issues of African people. Ashe.
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 Ashe. Ashe.
Ashe. Ashe. Ashe.
Ashe.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in with your wise comments and thoughts and wisdom. And I send out strength from the ancestors to those students at the university. Stand strong, stand tall, and may that damn cracker leave by Friday. Resign. Kick his ass out. They need to be throwing shit at his house. Put the same feces they use, put that swastika. Y'all go put it on his house. On his university.
What?
Place
what
wherever he stays.
Long live Sandra Bland. I'm sure they are filled with spirit.
But we can't.